Now, I always like to start the same way every time and be consistent with this, because this is the fundamental for understanding all things, and it's what is wisdom. And wisdom is the application of knowledge based on understanding. And I always say this, that you cannot know what you've never heard. You cannot understand what you don't know. And you cannot apply what you do not understand. And you cannot succeed in what you've never applied. These are fundamental principles of everyday life. And it has to be happened from step one to four all the time for any effective and consistent result. Sometimes people fluke it and things happen for them, and then they think, and then they question themselves why it doesn't happen the second time or the third time. It's because there's no consistency in these very principles. I can't just hear something and try to apply it. No, it's useless. I must get to know that knowledge. I must understand it. Only then I'm guaranteed that if I apply it, I'll get results on a consistent basis. And for this reason, farmers all around the world have done well in their crops. They've all maintained the pattern of consistency. They've learned a certain knowledge. They've got to know where they've understood it. And so when they plant their seeds, they don't stress. They don't panic about it, because they know when the right season comes in, so-and-so is going to come in. The mangoes are going to come in. So-and-so fruit's going to come in. They don't think too much. You won't see a farmer doing too much calculation. Once the seed has been dropped, that's it. They let the soil do what it does best. And so let's just skip through this stuff. Here we go. So the Bible, we use the Bible to explain some of the concepts here, and not as a religious book, and it has nothing to do with religion, because the Bible is psychological truth, and it's truth based on the mind. Every single thing written there is to do with your mind. It's the way your mind works. It's written in different methods that may be difficult to understand to the naked eye. But if you do study it, you understand how much of your mind it speaks of. And that's all it speaks of. It's your mind. Because your mind governs your life. Nothing happens in your life without the participation or the consent of your mind. Nothing. And so, if your mind governs your life, then this Bible, you could call it an autobiography. It's a story about you. It's not about somebody else. It's not about the world. It's about you. That's all it's about. Now, we've been going through the question of, can the mind really be controlled? And we all know that we went through and looked at different angles of it. And for example, one angle was that if the mind can really be controlled, if I could say to everybody, this very moment, stop thinking. Nobody can stop their thoughts. Well, what sort of control do we actually have? If you can't stop and start it whenever you feel like stop and starting, what sort of control do you have? Well, then we've spoken about that if you cannot be controlled, then the mind is like a child. And parents have always had this difficulty. They've tried to control their children. And the child can never be controlled. The only way we can do is communicate effectively so that the child themselves can go along with it. And parents that have tried to control their children, the moment the child gets a little bit of freeway, they're gone. It's just like the mind, right? You try to control it, it'll blow up in your face. And then you have all sorts of stress and disorders and depressions and all this stuff. Well, because you're trying to get some sort of control over it. Well, I went through this process of how we kill ourselves, 101. And the process of us and how we kill ourselves is very fundamental. And I'll take a couple minutes to always go through this. And it always happens from step 1 to 7, always. And if you have understanding on this step 1 to 7, and you know it by heart, what will happen is whenever you're facing a difficulty, you always know where your mind is. For example, if I'm in a company or I'm in a place or I'm in a workplace, the first thing is a lack of knowledge, right? When I have no knowledge of my identity, I feel powerless. For example, if I go into a job and I say, and identify myself. I'm a casual. From that very point of moment that I've identified myself as a casual, I've stripped away every form of power away from myself. Well, then if a problem arises, I don't want to do anything because I got to wait for the manager. I won't take initiative. And the mind, matter of fact, won't even give me ideas. It won't give me ideas. It won't give me innovation because the mind knows you identify yourself as a casual. So I'm going to give you only what a casual deserves, only what a casual can handle. Or, for example, if some people identify themselves with their skin color and say black, white, or this or that. Well, if you identify yourself with that, then it's like a regulation. You regulate your mind and you tell your mind only that which is inherited and give it to black people is what you can have. And that strips you away from getting anything you want from your life because of the way you've identified yourself. And so because we identify ourselves with different images, what happens is that when I lack a certain knowledge of who I am, the first thing that takes place is doubt. I start doubting and I ask and the questions that usually, or the statements that run through my mind is, I'm not sure if I can, if I can't, I can't decide. And you're not sure. And I always say insecurity means that you believe that you do not have the power within to affect or impact your external world. That's what makes us insecure. Whenever I'm insecure, it's because I feel powerless. I don't think I have the power to make changes. Well, we see it in for example, a company hierarchy, where the one who calls himself a director feels so powerful and they can make any calls and make changes. And because of that, they're not insecure about most things when it comes to the company. Well, everybody else is always in panic mode because they feel like they've got to answer to somebody always. They don't have power. And it's a matter of power and wisdom. It's always been a matter of power and wisdom. This whole world is based on it. Power, wisdom. That's all it is. And so then we see those doubts become fear. And so you question yourself and you say, what if this? What if that? What if I take this step? What if I take that step? What if I forgive this person? Would this person understand what I'm going through? What if I did this certain thing? What if I did that certain thing? And so when our mind overdoses that, it creates an anxiety. And so fear expresses itself into anxiety and stress. And it's just the overworking of the mind. And it's a thought overdose. And anxiety suppressed, when you keep it inside and you don't tell anybody, and these thoughts are constantly battling and beating in your mind, it creates a depression, which is a mood change. And it's just your body dying and telling you that you're killing me. And so, matter of fact, one of the statements I always say is, fear is not killing us. Fear is telling us that we are killing ourselves. Because a lot of people say, oh, I'm in fear of this and this, and they think the fear is the negative. No, fear is not the negative. It's a system designed to let you know that you're killing yourself. And so all this stuff are not negatives. They're positives. These are alarm systems created and embedded inside us to tell us how we are treating ourselves, how we're looking after ourselves, how we're not managing our lives correctly. And this body here is the highest level of chemical factory. It does everything on its own. It's all automated. And it's not about the factory, which is the body. It's about the CEO, whoever owns our body, whoever makes this decision. They're the ones that are making the wrong decision and disturbing a flow of system. If you cut yourself, your body heals itself. It doesn't need your help. But if you go in and put some dirt and whatever in it, you infect it. It is you who infected your own mind. Your mind is perfect in itself. But you have infected your own mind by the image you've created in your own head. So then depression creates a certain sickness, and a lot of people's life have been shortened because of that. And we've seen a lot of premature death, people dying way earlier than they should have died. And death is guaranteed. And if it's not death of the whole body, it's death of a certain function of your body. And so everybody's always in the hospital. 9 out of 10 times, people are always in the hospital looking for some sort of resources to help them manage this body. But the body doesn't need no medicine. The body eats its own medicine. The body only starts needing medicine when you are beating it down beyond what it can handle. Anyways, so that's it for this slide. We won't take too long in it. All right, so we talked about the two ways. We talked about the conscious mind is what a man knows, and the subconscious is what a man is. And so we've talked about the mind, which consists of the conscious and subconscious, and two communication methods are feelings and telepathy. And so we've been diving into these feelings and understanding feelings, what really is it, and how it actually works. And so feelings. Now, we went through an exercise to match a thought and a feeling. For example, every time a certain thought arises from your mind, you match it with a certain feeling. And so because it's matched, it's like the go-to. Your mind, it's a go-to. For example, when you use social media or you use Facebook, the last emoji that you used, when you open up your Facebook, that's the first thing that's recommended to you. It's the closest thing there. It's the last thing that you use. So the last state of mind that you went into when you were depressed, when you were sick, when you were angry or whatever, is the last thing, is the first thing your mind is going to suggest when you reach another situation. And if you're always disappointed, well, the moment a situation arises, disappointment is looking at you and saying, pick me, pick me. You picked me last time, pick me again. Well, then you match those thoughts and feelings. And so some of us have hardwired some thoughts with certain feelings. For example, when one loses a job, they've associated with a certain thought or a certain feeling. And whereas you see, even when we talk about first world and third world countries, we see a lot of people in third world countries, they may go through all sorts of trouble, but their attitude is always right. It's always positive. They're always smiling. Matter of fact, where people seem to have resources in first world countries is where there's most depression and stuff. And it's an interesting factor. Where there is a lack, people have gratitude and they share and there's love. Where we seem to have more, there seems to be a lot of trouble with the mind. Maybe we can think about why that's the case. And anyways, let's jump into what we're trying to get today.
Ah.
Feelings. All right. I've been asking for these few weeks, what is it? And Earth, you said something about water. Can you repeat what you said there? I like what you said before.
Last week I said feelings is your energy vibrating, like a vibration of energy. And we talked about how words are energy of its own. So when someone says something nasty to you, it's like you're the still water, and then those words are like the rock being thrown in that still water and causing a disturbance.
Yeah. So it's something that's causing a disturbance of something that is still. Now, let's dig deep into it. And for us to understand what's going on, there's a lot of terminologies we must get used to. And for example, feeling, thought, intention, attitude, memory, belief, perception. A feeling, really, what takes place with a feeling is a bunch of chemicals, neurons that are rearranged into networks to reflect the information from the senses. So how does that work? This is how it works. So I use my senses and I send my senses out, and they go out and they look, they touch, they feel, and they bring back information back to me. And when they bring back information back to you, the information they bring back to you is useless. It's just plain information. It has no meaning. Well, your job now is to give it a meaning. That's your first job, the first thing your mind does. If someone grabbed a rock and chucked it at your car and wrecked it, you come outside and you look at your car. information comes in. Well, your mind is questioning you. Meaning, what does this mean? That's the first thing it's questioning you. What does this mean? Well, you can choose and say, this means racism. That's your choice. And it happens so fast in your mind. You've given it a meaning. And for another person, it must mean, I'm getting a new car. For another person, it may mean, another person is against you. For another person, it may mean all sorts of things. And so we all get that decision making. We all get placed in that decision making position where we have to decide, what does it mean? And so whatever meaning we give, it gets reflected into a constructive pattern of neuron that creates a certain emotion. So feelings don't just pop out of nowhere. It's the meaning you've given it that's generated that feeling. Because when I lost the job, I looked at myself, I said, whoa. Not lost the job. When I couldn't get a job, I looked at myself and I said, whoa. And I sat there and I said, okay, for me, this situation means that I'm too expensive for anybody to pay me. Well, if I'm too expensive for anybody to pay me, what do? I start my own company. Well, everything else was flowing from there because of the meaning I gave it. And now they might give a meaning and say, this means to me that I'm inadequate, or I don't have enough degrees, or I haven't graduated from this, or I'm not good enough. Or, for example, I was helping a lady out, and she had an interview, and she contacted me. I think it was probably 2 days or so before she had an interview, and she's having a crazy meltdown. I said, okay, why are you melting down? The interview's in 2 days. Man, I just feel like they're going to say this, they're going to say that, they're going to say this. I said, whoa, you haven't met anybody that's interviewing you. How can you be coming up to conclusions? Well, the mind is generating different meanings. And so sometimes this happens to us, and you're supposed to go out for a job, and then you check for your friend, and your friend tells you, well, 99 people apply for that job. And those people, no one got in. What makes you think you can get in? And then you go do research and you find that there's 99 people that apply. Then you see they have 3 degrees and so forth. And then you look at yourself, you don't even have a degree. You say, oh, I can't make it. The requirement is A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Well, the requirement is for those who want to be under the requirement. It's not for you. The requirement is for those who want to be under the requirement. It's not for you. You have the power and the wisdom to set your own requirement, to rewrite your own reality. And that's always been the case. Do you or do you not have the power to rewrite your own reality? Well, mom said, dad said, so-and-so said, the university said, this and this said. Well, people are always saying. When are you going to say something? Here's the question I'll ask out to the floor. What stops us from saying something? Why do we always run to the government said, somebody said, so-and-so said? And we struggle to really look at myself and say, what do I say about this situation? Why is there a struggle? Anybody?
I think it goes back to that whole 7-circle thing that we were talking about. So it's the lack of knowledge and then fear. You start doubting yourself, like, who am I to actually say something? These rules have been going on for lots of years. The government says.
Anybody? Anyone else? Why can't we say something?
I think
Yeah, it's on. Yeah.
All right. I think majority of people are actually afraid to speak up. That is our biggest fear. We actually are programmed to think in a different way.
Yeah.
So like the media control us, school control us, everybody around us control us to actually control us of how we should think, how we should act, how we should talk. So nobody actually allowed us to express our own self, our own individualism. Thank you.
Yeah.
Also, I think a lot of people are afraid that what they may say is wrong. They don't feel like, you know, they don't want. That also plays a big factor into if someone says this and if they have a high credibility, then they might be right. Whereas you have nothing, not really say any credibility. So, yeah, because of that, I think that may be another reason as well.
So you reckon there's a bit of fear of being wrong. And I know you mentioned about everything around us controlling us. Let's talk about that. How is it that everything around us is controlling us? Who is giving it the power? If someone on Instagram said, this is what beautiful looks like, they didn't knock on your door and say, knock, knock, I'm here to control you, to change your mind in terms of what beautiful looks like today. Nobody's actually going on your throat and pressing it down. No, they're putting it out there. But it's very interesting. Who goes and gets it and brings it home? Don't we do that? Because when someone comes up with a new trend, they're not knocking on people's door. Knock, knock, knock. I'm here to introduce you a new trend. Follow me or die. Is that what they say? So how come we seem, and what she's saying is right. It feels like they're controlling you. And how you think and how you do things and even our families and so forth. Even though nobody really comes directly to you. Why is that the case? Anybody? Why is that the case? Nobody has ever held a knife on our throat for us to follow anything. But yet we feel like that's what they're doing. Yeah. 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 You said very, very good worded. You're going to say something to Mirren.
I think it's very true that you said media control us. Malcolm X, I think many of us know about, heard of Malcolm X. He's the guy who warned us like 50, 60 years ago that media is the most powerful entity on the earth because it controls the brains of the masses. So if we don't realize that, like, the media is trying to control us. The government tells us what to do, like social media. Some of them have become like a digital, there was a saying he said, digital crack cocaine for social media. For those like who are like highly addicted, like people keep on scrolling TikToks and Facebook for hours, you know, for all day long. So these are the things that knows how human brain works, like how they can penetrate into our subconscious mind and put the things in our head that we think that it's true. So, but it's not the case. Like they are doing it for like capitalism or you know, for their own profit. So if we realize this, and if we then we can have the power to like choose what to do, like instead of engaging in something that's not productive, we can spend, you know, our time in learning something or working out or, you know, something that we really love doing. So I think that's it. Yeah.
Interesting. Another question would be, when they were doing the study to understand the subconscious, where were we? And that's the question my mom always used to ask me. I used to say, so-and-so family are so powerful and they're controlling the masses and controlling the world and they're making decisions, they got power. Well, my mom used to say, so where are you? Before they got into that position, what were you doing? If they're controlling you, well, they did their research and study to understand the mind, to understand the governing factors of this world. Well, the average person has yet finished a single book in their life. So in a sense, if you yet finish a single book and you don't bother about understanding your life as a whole, you deserve to be controlled, right? You do. Because if we don't control you, you're going to cause problems in the society. Because you understand nothing about yourself. And if you understand nothing about yourself and nothing about your mind, the right order is control. We must control the masses. Well, that's if you identify yourself as a mass. And that keeps order. But order is not for everybody. Matter of fact, we know very well that the large companies don't pay taxes. Taxes is for the small people. We know that very well. And they can dodge the oil and gas company. They dodge it here and there. And they have power to decide to change the laws and businesses, the banks. These are the guys that control the government. These are people in position of power. Well, if they're in that position and they can decide, what stops you from getting in that position as well? Well, then we're going to say, I wasn't born in a family that was rich. The excuses will start there.
Yeah. I just want to talk about, like, a lot of the reason why we do let other people take control is purpose, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
Existence is weird. We don't know why we're here. We don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
So you may as well exist for something. But I've been thinking about the idea of you're talking about control, like control over your feelings.
Yeah.
And I want to go back to the example you said of if someone was to throw a rock through my windshield.
Yeah.
My first thought would probably be like, what the heck, man? Because, well, what else am I going to feel? I'm not going to feel, man, I hope that guy's okay. You know, he just threw that rock in my car. I really hope he's doing well. And I feel like, yeah, why should we have control over our feelings? Because feelings are what make us human. You know, if I don't have feelings, I'm just going from one thing to another thing like a worker ant, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not actually existing.
Yeah. And I love how you said feelings, but you got to think of it in this aspect. When we look at somebody and we say, most women, they'll look at guys and say, oh, I don't like emotional guys. I've heard that so many times from women. And there's something about emotion that's been categorized. And we've labeled the feelings and say, if someone is happy, we don't count happiness as a feeling anymore, joyfulness as a feeling. When we think of feelings, it's usually angry, disturbed, or all the negative aspects of it. Well, what makes us human is also the positive aspects of it. We've only looked at the negative aspects of it. And that example of someone threw a rock in your car is not even an example. It's a reality. It's my reality. Twice. Someone threw a rock. I looked at the car. Nah, I can't be bothered. I'll fix it tomorrow. Couldn't waste a single bit of energy. So what you gonna do? Yell, scream, and then the car's fixed? Well, if you see the person that did it, you can tell them off and say, don't do that. Well, there's no need to go any further than that. Because it's taking a toll on you, not on the person. You are the one that's exhausting your energy and never coming to a solution. And that's what we have in a lot of situations, is where we are exhausting ourselves over nothing and never coming to an actual solution. A lot of people will come to me and say, Joe, I've got a problem. I say, oh, cool. All right. What's your problem? What's the go? This, my family, this, my dad, this, someone did this to me at work and this. And I said, all right, so what are we going to do? And then they go, well, someone did it. He did this to me. She did this to me. All right, what are we going to do? They don't want to move to the state of doing something. They don't want to act on it. They just want to sit on that stage of someone did this to me, victimization. They did this to me. Well, they did it to you. Okay, we heard it. What next? And you'd be surprised every time you're facing a situation and someone is babbling about different things, and just ask them, so what do we do now? What next? And you'd be surprised how many people don't want to move from there.
I feel like a lot of that is fear. We don't want to be independent. We don't want to be powerful.
Yeah.
Because that's scary, you know? I don't want to have to blame myself.
Yeah.
You know? I want to be able to blame that person because I don't like that person, you know? I don't want to be able to go, no, you're stupid. You should have done that. And I guess that's why we want to follow powerful people, because if we're following someone else, we've accepted the fact that we're not going to be in charge. And we're okay with that because we don't want to be in charge. I don't want to be in charge. I'd be a terrible leader. I just find that interesting how we probably could do a lot if we were actually not scared to take control.
Yeah. And a man said, he said, all it takes to be successful is to take responsibility. That's all it takes. People don't want to do that. Responsibility is it. That's the only requirement it requires if you're looking for the path of success. And well, then a lot of people want to be successful and I'll say, okay, how many people are you responsible for? I'm just looking after myself. Well, provision comes in demand. Matter of fact, Jesus displayed this. And if you guys know the story of him multiplying fishes and bread, well, because there was a multitude of people in need, only then provision is given. Provision is given according to the need. It's always done that. For example, you see a lot of people in situations where money never comes, right? But when a serious situation takes place, that very moment, money starts coming because they've taken a certain responsibility. I want to pay this off. I want to fix this. I want to help this certain person. Money just starts showing up. Why? Because you've given it a demand. There's a demand. There's an actual demand. And there's actual responsibility taken. An aspect of that is also, like you said before, people don't want to be powerful. And we run away from power. Why is that we run away from power?
Uh, I guess one other thing is, if we become powerful, then we become that figure of responsibility for other people.
Yeah.
You know, they can go, oh, but they did this, or they said that. And, you know...
Anybody else? Why do we run away from power?
I mean, I'm not sure about running away from power. Not everybody's running away from power. Some people just don't have opportunity to actually gain that power. So, yeah.
You think so?
I believe so. So, I'll give you an example. We here in Australia, we've got opportunity, yeah? There's people in overseas that have more knowledge, more skills, that actually don't have opportunity to actually create something or do something. So, it's actually more of the area you're at. I think the whole entire topic will be, like, broad, because it's not just based on, like, I don't want power, or we're running away from power, because some people are not actually running away from power. Some people just don't have opportunity to actually gain that power.
I believe that my perspective, that we all have power and we choose it every single moment of our life. And, you know, you were saying that you believe that you'll be a terrible leader, but what if I told you that I believe you'd make a great leader? You have the power to choose to believe that or not. And that's not, I don't have that power to choose to believe what I said to you. You have the power to choose it. But it's simply like a choice. Yeah. Responsibility. But it'd be like, I think when you do have that power, you also have the knowledge that every single person has that power within themselves, and you don't really take responsibility over them like they're your children, but more like you give them the responsibility of their own life, you know, like you pass on that power, that knowledge of power to them that's already been with them all along, with or without you, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Just going back to the opportunity thing, I actually disagree with that, because a lot of times, a lot of people, they wait for their opportunity. The thing is, when you wait for, I've seen many people that waited for their opportunity for years, and it doesn't just come in a silver platter. Sometimes you have to get yourself out there. And yeah, you know, our circumstances in Australia may be different to a third world country, but so sometimes you got to start thinking, you know, you have to, like what Joel was saying about responsibility. Yeah, once you start taking responsibility for yourself, the opportunities will arise, but you have to make the decision to, you know, go that step forward to get the opportunity, you know? And I just wanted to make a comment on that.
Yeah, I agree with Alwyn. I have a cousin in Zimbabwe who studying chemical engineering, and back home it's like you said, you know, if you wait for opportunities, they're not gonna come, especially back home. So what he did, he's about 5 years older than me, so he started his own business, and now he's in Poland in Europe, and they paid for his whole 5 years to study there, accommodation, everything, just by him creating something. He's now overseas. So I think it's about create something, don't wait, just go. If you've got a vision, run with it. Just go. Like, and I wanted to come back to what you said before, because most people who don't have a vision follow everyone else, and I've seen this a lot, that when you have your own vision, what you start to, you begin to look around and you see yourself as, actually, I can do this. Whereas a lot of people like to follow someone else and go, this person has a vision. But whereas when you've established your own, It's different. You just go.
All right. Just gonna make a point about your cousin that you said.
I think the mic is off. Yeah. All the way up. Yeah. Yeah, cool.
Okay. I'm just gonna make a little bit of point about your cousin that you said that it's actually choice. Now, your cousin has an opportunity to get a degree before actually getting into the other stage. some people will not actually have that opportunity to even start in that little path. Am I right?
I'm gonna have to disagree. Because for example, I failed year 12. I failed school, but I knew I wanted to be a lawyer. And I think my ATAR was 43. So I completely failed. It was impossible to get in. And it was my mental state. It was either for a month or so, I was a bit, I was sad. I was like, oh, what am I going to do? But then I told myself, I realized that I'm not a lawyer when CDU says I'm a lawyer. I'm a lawyer because I say I'm a lawyer. You are what you say you are. I am whatever I say I am. So what I mean by that is that when you declare and make a demand and say, I'm a lawyer, the outer world, this world must reflect that. And I've done it time and time again. For example, last year I couldn't find a job, right? I got rejected from even McDonald's. And I went, like, how can I not find a job? I've worked at a law firm, et cetera, et cetera. So I went, I'm going to be my own boss, and I started with my own businesses. But do you see what I'm saying? That first your mind goes, right, and then your life follows. If you have a prosperity consciousness, you shall be prosperous. Whereas if you have a poverty consciousness, you attract what you are. Do you know what I mean?
Dragging on that over and over, but I think when we're talking about power, we're talking about individual power. So if we look at a perspective of people in another scenario, then it becomes a little bit different. So for example, when you give me example about you applying for a job, for example, I had that in my life where I applied for a job. Now, my behavior is I'll apply to 20 jobs, yeah? And they say that I'm actually one of the health professionals. Say there's jobs everywhere, yeah? So I will apply to 20 jobs. Out of that 20 jobs, I guarantee that I get one interview, yeah? And that's how I know that I have power there. But if I am a person that was in a country that didn't have opportunity to study what I studied, that didn't have a family that can pay for my school, then in that moment, my power is being taken because it's actually being determined by the society.
Could I just jump in on that?
No, this is good stuff.
I see that you're both right. Both of you are right. Like, one person believes that they have opportunity, one person believes that they don't. But the person who believes that they don't hasn't heard or believed that opportunity is possible. And it just goes back to what Joel was saying, that you can't know what you haven't heard, you cannot understand what you don't know, and you cannot apply what you don't understand. And you cannot succeed what you have never applied. And it's just all goes back to knowledge, about coming to that knowledge, getting the understanding, and applying it in your life.
Yeah, just adding on to that, knowledge is very important, but alongside that is vision. When you were talking about, when you don't have the financial situation to get that opportunity, for example, like I have a lot of friends that are in Darwin right now that are international students that they come here as, when they come here with an opportunity, but I know for a fact that back in India, they don't have that financial situation. They built that for themselves. They worked hard with what they had, worked up, got to Australia, and now they work, 40, 60 hours a week just to try and make that income. I understand what you're saying about, not getting the opportunity, but it also comes with what decision you make at that situation, whether you want to move forward in life or whether you say, oh, okay, I don't have this financial situation, I'll stay where I am. And that's what decides a successful person from a failure. The person that makes the decision to be able to move forward, no matter what situation they're in, that's what decides who is successful and who's not.
The problem is never of opportunities, because opportunities are everywhere. The problem is, can you see it? Can you identify it when it comes in front of you? I had a mate of mine from a third-world country, from Lebanon. He was there. He complained and all sorts about opportunity here, opportunity not coming, opportunity not coming. Well, when he told me his story, as he's speaking, I'm saying, what the hell? I see opportunities here. He doesn't see it. Because why? Because most of the time, and you're right in the sense of conditioning, because the environment you grow on and what you hear and what you feed on conditions your mind, right? And so you can't see what happens around you. So what happens? An opportunity, the asshole, I was seeing three steps ahead. I told him, connect yourself with this person. They don't look like they have much now, but they are connected to this person. And I said, nah, I don't know if I want to be friends with him. He doesn't seem like this. Like, what nonsense is this? Do you not see or do you not see? Well, another man of mine, he was so conditioned of being a taxi driver when I created an opportunity for him to be an engineer. Guess what he said? I don't know. And he sabotaged himself. The interview, he came 2 hours late. Self-sabotage. It's mental. A lot of people self-sabotage. And so when you're conditioned, for example, and you've seen poverty all your life, matter of fact, if you check the prayers of those in third world countries, they never pray for innovation. Nobody ever pray for innovation. They pray, give me this. Give me that. Well, innovation comes with money, finance, everything. It's a whole pack. Ask for the source. Don't ask for the fruit. And a lot of us are trying to get the fruit, not realizing if you get the source, you can always produce fruits. Well, if you gave a lot of people, you said, here is 20 seeds. All these guys will chuck the seeds in the bin. But if you gave them food-growing trees, well, people love trees that someone else has grown already. When someone else has gone through the work of growing the seed into a tree and it's bearing fruit, then people say, give it to me. But when it's still a seed, can you identify a seed when it's there? That's always been the thing. Because opportunity, I tell you, shows up in everybody. It's only whether you can identify or not. That is the hard bit. That is a hard bit. I got another cousin. He's still in Africa. And his parents, they're having a chat with my mom, and I'm walking past. And when I'm listening, I'm hearing opportunities. But they're complaining. They say, life is hard here. This is what's going on around the streets, and this and that happened. UN came in and did this. Some of the land here are being sold, and they're doing some building and agriculture. We're going to lose. And I said, the opportunity is right there. You know the land. You know the person that owns the land. Start doing agriculture there. Because when the farming and mining starts taking place, you'll be there. The opportunity arises if you're there. If you're never there, it will never arise. Where are you when the opportunity is? A lot of people aren't there. And we need to be able to see opportunities 3 or 4 or 5 steps ahead. Well, we don't want to see that. We want someone to knock on our door. Knock, knock. I'm here to offer you $1 million. And you say, oh God, you're good. But if they told you, leave your family where you are, travel to a random country, stay there for 6 months. After 6 months, an opportunity will show itself. How many people will go? Not many people.
Oh yeah, just to add what you were saying.
Yeah.
Has anyone here seen The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind? Yeah. Yes, so like what, so it's basically about this 13-year-old boy who lived in a third world country and his town was on the verge of famine. And what Joel was saying, like he can see opportunities. It's just your perspective if you want to look for it or not or wait for the conditions to change. And this boy just, he saw what he could make out of what he's got in that place. Like I think there was like a garage, like a dump area where he found like things to make a motor. And and what Joel was saying about innovation, like what can I create to I guess serve the people and save his town, save my town pretty much. And this 13-year-old, it's a true story too. And he did. He made the motor, made the windmill thing and got the water flowing. And so his whole town had gotten water and food, like garden, like a vegetable garden and stuff, just because this 13-year-old saw the opportunity despite his conditions and, yes, pretty much saved his town. Yeah, so I think it's, you know, perspective, and if you have that in your heart to save the town and to be innovative, like, the opportunity will draw itself to you.
Yeah, I think with, like, that perspective as well, it sort of just, it sounds like if I move to, you know, a different place, Australia or something, God or the universe or Buddha or whatever you believe in will, you know, hear me better. And it's not really like...
That's true.
Yeah.
A lot of people believe that.
It's not really like that. You know, God or the universe, it's everywhere. It's in us all. And it's just about, I mean, if you want to take that perspective of moving somewhere, all it would do is it would change the surroundings in your environment, and then maybe you may think differently. But it's all about your perspective, your inner dialogue that's going on.
And I even question that maybe you may think differently, because aren't we in Australia? Well, how many people are crying about their day job? How many people are depressed about their 9-to-5-day job? I speak to people countless time and time again. I'm tired of my job, man. I wish I had a better job. Aren't we in a land of opportunity that we, like we say we are? How many people in the sentence say, I wish this was this way? I counsel a lot of elders, and they always say, I wish I was your age. I could have done more. I could have done better. If I was still your age, if I was still this, if I had the opportunity you guys have now. What you mean if you had the opportunity we have now? See, now it goes from not country-based, not third world, first world. It goes from, we're still in the same country, but we're going to say that 30 years ago, opportunity was less than it is now. And so there's excuses. There will always be excuses. For example, if someone wants to give an excuse why they're not making a certain amount of money, they can find all sorts of excuses. Or excuses for not managing your money correctly. Well, a lot of people make money anyway, but at the end of the week, it's all gone. And then they make all sorts of excuses and say, oh, yeah, the reason it's gone is because I had to pay for this and this, and I had to help so-and-so, so-and-so. Are you the only one that had to help family? Are you the only one in the world that has a family? Well, when do we stop? Because then one person may say, it's because of my mom. Now another say, my grandma. And then it will go generation to generation. We'll go all the way back to Adam and Eve. We'll just blame, and say, yeah, these guys that came before me didn't make it easy for me to win in life. That's always what we say, right? The ones who came before us didn't make it easy for us to win in life.
I also believe that environment plays a significant factor.
It does.
So a wise man once said, a bird born in a cage thinks flying is an illness. So it's like none but ourselves that can free our minds, you know? Like,
yeah.
That's what I mean.
Now, and environment does play a huge factor. That's exactly the reason of having this. Matter of fact, the knowledge we learn from just this small group. In the whole year, you haven't heard anything like this before. You haven't heard different opinions like this before, different mindset like this before. So the average person probably goes 10, 15, 20 years and never hear anything like this before. So what decision do you expect them to make that successful?
I just want to... Sorry. I'll go. I just want to touch on environment, and it takes me back to the story of Joseph. You know, we all know Joseph in the Bible, and how he had a vision, but because of his environment, that vision couldn't have been produced there. And he was sent to Egypt, I'm pretty sure, to manifest his vision. So I just wanted, to touch on that. Environment and the people you're around is very important. Because some people can't be around when the vision is just a vision. You know, you've got to leave and you've got to go away, and then when they see the bigger picture, that's when they can come back and go, yeah. But another thing I wanted to say is that every problem in this world is a business. It is. People, the reason we have doctors is because there's people who are sick. Do you see where I'm coming from? I saw youth crime and said, okay, that's a business. So what did I do? I developed my own business, developing youth programs. People who build computers, software engineers, they see, okay, the world is developing. People, you know, need computers, laptops. In fact, now there's a phone that you can scan with your face, whereas 20 years ago, you were doing Nokia. So do you see what I mean? Business. It's all business. Yeah.
Just one thing I want to address, and this has been like a very good like discussion and stuff. But what you said about perception sort of sparked this, and we've addressed power quite a lot.
Yeah.
But what
we're supposed to be on feeling, but now we've gone on power.
Yeah,
let's keep going.
We've addressed power sort of multiple times. We've gone a bit back and forth, but we haven't actually addressed the base. What are we talking about when we talk about power? Because so I'm a bit of a basketball fan, so I'm going to use LeBron James as an example. A lot of people know LeBron James, even if you don't follow basketball. And I feel like a lot of people consider him, like, relatively powerful. But sort of for what reasons? Is he powerful because he's quite fit? He's athletic?
Yeah.
Is he powerful because he has a lot of influence? Is he powerful because he's skillful? Is he powerful because he has that mindset of an athlete? You know, a lot of people would say he's powerful for different reasons. And I just think that's interesting, you know. Power isn't determined by who's in charge. It's determined by who's following them.
Beautiful. Well said. Anybody else want to comment on that statement? What exactly is power? Because we know there's even a part, the whole biblical principle, and Jesus that we know of in the Bible is not a figure like we think it is. Paul describes him. Jesus has entered into our hearts and is dwelling there as the power of God and the wisdom of God. Well, then if someone says, Jesus is a man that walked around 2,000 years ago that did so and so, this is what he's trying to show you. And if you look through his life, he demonstrates two very things in constant basis, power and wisdom. Well, I'm pretty sure if you do a study, you realize what really made him power. Well, guess what? He's one of the names right now that for history, for a lifetime, people can't get it off their mind. They can't get it off their eyes. You see it everywhere. Everybody seems to be jumping on it. Other people like Martin Luther, he had a dream. It was his vision. Now everybody's adopted that vision. Influence is very interesting. There's a lot of people in the history that got to that position of power and wisdom, because if you separate the two, it's always destruction. Anybody that has power and no wisdom leads to a life of destruction. Power and wisdom are one. Only the combination of the two, because power gives you authority to do something, but if you don't know what to do, what can you do? So wisdom is necessary, so I know what to do.
Just following on from that, actually, this clinical psychologist on YouTube, and he was talking about things about the Bible, and there's a verse in Matthew 5:5 where it says, "Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth." So meek in this term, like, you know, weak, someone who useless, but it doesn't make sense, right? A person that is weak, useless, inheriting the world, that doesn't make sense. And he actually did a bit of the translation actually got changed a little bit from original text, and it person power. The definition that he said was a person who has a sword, knows how to use it really well, but keep she doesn't, you know, don't take it out, will inherit the world. So what does that mean? A person that has the power, and how power, like you said, can be mean a lot of things, right? For the good, keep using it for the good or not using it at all. Yeah. Exactly. The wisdom to be able to keep it cheap, to know when and use it. That's in the world, and I completely agree with that because let's just take a look, for example, a very rich guy. I guess you could say he's powerful in that sense. But he's not, you know, using that money to build mass destruction weapons and, you know,
he could be doing that.
Okay, let's assume he's not. But when you look at, for example, Hitler, he had the power, but then decides to use it for evil. And because of that, he's, another thing the psychologist said was, People, like you said, people have power, but they are considered cowards. So there's three sets of people. The first one that I said, the person that has the power but keeps the sheep. The second one is the person that has power but misuses it. And the third one is the person who has no power and has no wisdom to gain that power either.
Which is the large percentage, 90% of the world.
90% of the people.
No power, no wisdom. Yeah. We're just saying, feed me, begging, waiting for somebody to do something for us. That's a lot of us here. Feed me, give me, someone, do something for me. We do. That's a speech every day. Feed me, give me, do something for me. And that's very interesting. I always say this, and a lot of us have hidden behind religious figures and churches and religious gathering and so forth, thinking that we are safer there. But there is no place to hide in this world. There is no place to hide. You'll be exposed to every single area of life, every single emotion, every single state. You'll be exposed to it. And there is no hiding. And the whole world is always going to beat you up until you stop running and you realize, I have power and wisdom already in me to do the crazy things. Because you already do. The way your body fixes itself as you go to sleep is infinite intelligence. For your body to wake up in the morning the way it wakes up, it's crazy if you do a study on that. There's already so much intelligence in the way you function and so much power in it. But you still think you're weak. I don't understand. How can we still think we're weak? This functionality, for example, I always say, the most complex thing in the world is the art of breathing. Breathing and pumping blood all through the vessels. How does that happen? Science still can't pinpoint what really happens. Well, if that's the most complex thing and we do it so fluently, so easily, why are the easy things so hard? Money, come on. Money, which is where a lot of people don't go any further than animal instincts, which is what? Mating and survival. Which is the shouting stuff. We mate, we survive, we shelter, mating, shelters, mating, shelter, mating. That's it. That's what we're trying to be doing now. We're just trying to survive. Well, the average person, we're going to think, if you ask them, what's going on? Money will be in one of your sentences. And if you don't hear money in a sentence, it's all sorts of kinding in his mind. And people are just trying to survive. They're counting it by the day. I'm just trying to survive.
I think you were asking my thing on power is the strength of your mind, the strength of someone's mind. And like what Alwyn was saying, you know, and Joel. So Joel was saying it's, you know, true power is with wisdom. It can't be without wisdom. They're one. And then what Alwyn was saying about Hitler, you know, he had that power to influence and take over whatever he did. But then at the end of it, he killed himself, you know. So that power was, because it wasn't aligned with wisdom, it wasn't, like I'd say, like it's like fake power, you know. Yeah.
Forget feelings. We'll come back to this next week. We're on power now. Now then, what's the process to gaining power? A lot of us feel powerless in our workplace. We feel powerless in our own household. We feel powerless in our finance, in our surrounding. We feel powerless in getting a job. We feel powerless in changing our reality. Is there a process? What's the step? If someone here was listening and thinking about inside, I want to change my reality from today day on. I want to stop going to the gas station, filling in some fuel and looking at the number, making sure I get $30 on the dot because my card might decline. I want to be able to fill it up and not even look at the number. And these are small things. It tells you how much in control you are, how much power you have. Man, I went through years and years. I used to watch it. One day I filled up $5. After that day, I said, nah, I cannot be living like this. I put $5 fuel. I said, nah, I cannot do this. I looked at my account, I was in debt, I was in this. I said, nah, that's not the life. And they're calling you out, Afterpay is here, don't worry, get more credit, get more this. And then you get it, you think you have money, you don't have money, you're in debt. Someone says, Christmas time, buy a couple of your family members some gifts. You go in Kmart, and you're looking at the price very closely. Or power, even in a mental state. Someone tells you, you can't become this, or you can't do this. Well, then you agree with them and you say, yeah, I probably can't. You're powerless. An individual say, take responsibility. For example, they look at, imagine I went to your house and I looked at your parents' house and I said, you know what, Alwyn, renovate your dad's house. Oh, no, that's a lot of money, man. Well, when are we going to get into this position where we can effectively do something without thinking about resources? Because we're always thinking resource. If it's not to do with money, it's to do with food. Well, everybody go on a 3-day fast. Some people say, I'm going to die, man. Why? You're so conditioned to food. You can't go any day without food. Powerless. Then how do we get any form of power?
I just think that the power is a lot to do with our mindset. So. For example, you said $5 petrol?
Fuel, man. That was,
yeah.
Nah, man.
Sorry, I'm not making fun of you. I've never had a car.
No, make fun of me, man. That day. Because I'm not that very person anymore.
I think you perceive it more like you had a $5 petrol. In my case, I'll probably see that at least I have a car to use $5 petrol than somebody that doesn't have a car. So it's just a mindset. It's how you see it.
It is. But the mind was never meant to be stagnating. There's no problem with starting small, but staying small becomes an issue. Starting small is never a problem. Staying small is a problem. It means your body is growing, but your mind is not. Well, what do? When we see people where their body may be growing and their mind is not, we in the society, we call them out, we say, he must have some mental illness or he must have some disability. That's what we say, right? Because a certain part of their mind or their body isn't growing. Well, we got to make sure it's the case with us, that we are not disabling ourselves in the mind, but we're enabling ourselves to do great things. Well, if this whole year I spend doing $5 fuel, next year I can't be doing $5 fuel. Come on. If I'm still doing $5 fuel, then the mindset has yet changed. Then the growing has yet to be done. Well, guess what? The average person, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years in the same loop.
Yeah, I just want to add, like, if you don't want to grow, what you have will be taken away from you. Like,
yeah.
You know, even if you just have, you know, your money in your savings account and it's not working, you know, inflation over the years will take it. And, you know, like a packet of, like my dad said, a packet of cigarettes back in the day used to be like, you know, 20 cents. Now they're $50. It's, you know, so fuel, $5 today is not going to be $5 in the future. It's that money that you're not intuitively growing is going to get taken away.
And I remember Jesus said, the tree that does not bear fruit shall be cast away. And look, $5 isn't bad. I filled up 60 cents before then. I don't even go to the petrol shop. I normally go to the pay it yourself, so I don't have to serve anyone. But yeah, like this time last year was completely different. I was in debt. And a preacher that I watched said, you cannot be doing the same thing you were doing last year. You just can't, because you don't grow. And it's not about waiting for opportunities, because what I used to do is wait. I used to wait for someone to call me and be like, Sizzle, come, let's do this, or Sizzle, come, let's do that. And you have to go, what do I like to do? How can this better the lives of everyone else? So how can I do this to value? Because your rewards in life are in the exact proportion to your service. So you use what you have to go out and serve. And there's a verse in the Bible that says, he who has shall have more and shall have abundance. And he who has not, even the little he has shall be taken away.
I even put it on the board.
And what's that trying to, the thing that verse is trying to tell us is that when you go out to look for opportunities or create opportunities, look for opportunities to be of service to others. Because I realize it's a hard way. I used to look for jobs to gain money. I didn't care about people. I didn't care what the job was. I said, okay, $30 an hour, I'll apply for that job. I didn't even read the job. But now, and I realized that those jobs I applied for from that mental, because I was doing it from a mindset of lack. I was doing it, I'm lacking, so I'm going to try and gain. And it doesn't work like that. But what you have to do is that I already have enough. And there was times where I woke up and I told myself, I'm richer and richer by the day. I had 0 cents. I had people calling me owing money. And I told myself, I'm richer and richer by the day. And then I went out to look for service. And your rewards, checks come in, etc., business contracts, because your service.
And that's always the highest value of life. It's in service. Matter of fact, big companies, they're lovely. They've spent most of their money in marketing. How do we make people feel like we're giving them what they want? We're serving the people. That's all marketing is, right?
Just adding to that, something struck in my head about the cigarettes.
Yeah.
So with the cigarette company, I've been thinking, instead of just writing the things that we already know, like smoking causes cancer or it's injurious to health,
yeah,
why don't they write those? If they really want us to quit, why don't they write study philosophy in the text, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
That if they're not saying us this is, they're trying to upsell us, like keep on having. So
yeah.
Instead of, you know, like they're trying to not make us quit. That's what I want to say. Like they're trying to sell more instead of say warning us. So prohibition, some anything prohibition or negative thing that creates effect on the brain that people will want more.
Yeah.
That's why they know that how it works.
Yeah.
That's why the cigarette companies like put labels on that, and that's so obvious that they can enter into human brains. So.
Corey, pass the mic to Layton. Layton.
Hello.
Layton.
Well, in terms of cigarettes, like what it comes down to is, yeah, cigarettes don't care. Like cigarette companies do not care about you. And like, I'll be honest. And even with their packaging saying, you know, smoking kills, it's not because they want to. Like you go overseas, has anyone ever been to Dubai or like any other international company? Australia is one of the only countries in the world that have, you know, stop smoking. This is what happens. You look at the branding overseas and it looks luxurious, black boxes, all luxury. Like, trust me when I say, like, yeah, they don't care, bro.
Well,
and they don't want you to stop.
They care about you buying it.
Then no, the average person, even if they wanted to stop, they can't stop. Because the average person would try to stop smoking by controlling the mind. They will say, mind, from today on, I'm going to stop smoking. And then you see, that's always the button, right? The average person has no understanding that the mind cannot be controlled. You must learn how to communicate with it effectively. So the average person, the first thing they'll say, all right, New Year's resolution. You've been seeing a lot on Facebook recently. I'm going to stop this, stop that. They know that it's a conditioning of the mind, that you can't just stop it when you say stop.
And coming back to power in terms of marketing and cigarettes, well, you have a look at any Western, you have a look at any movie or whatever, you see all the cool guys, you see them all smoking, stuff like that. It's already ingrained in you, you know? So, yeah, smoking's cool, very awesome or whatever. It's only in Australia that, like, smoking cigarettes is actually kind of uncool. Like, you go over to Europe and kids are smoking at the age of 14 and, you know, that's the trend. So, Australia is a bit of an outlier, but in terms of the marketing and the influence that these cigarette companies have, it's ingrained in our movies, it's ingrained into our culture, it's ingrained pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, and I'll let it, there's a lot of people that want to say something, so I'll let them say. Yeah.
All right, so let me just put a little bit of a thing in regarding to the cigarette. In regarding to the picture, it was actually not done by the company. It was actually enforced by the public health. So it was actually part of the request for the public health, because the government does not want to actually stop the cigarette because it's actually bringing a lot of tax. So therefore, they have to cooperate, and then the public health has enforces and say that we need to put pictures so actually it can be like a promotion so the people can see it and say, oh my gosh, this is happening. So it's not actually the cigarette company that actually enforces those pictures.
Yeah.
The age group wise as well is come from a decision of public health as well.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the cigarette company as well. So that is, they decided that instead of children smoking, that they need to actually put some age group on it, so that when you're actually 18, according to the statistic, saying that your mind will be more in an adult form when you make decisions, and then you can take the choices and it can become your freedom. So if you know that this is causing you harm and you want to take it, then it's your personal freedom.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying, like the government has put the pictures on. But also in relation to that, even though the government has put on these price hikes, the government also realizes, like the government is actually working for us. Like despite the amount of money that they make in revenue from taxes of cigarettes, like it's huge, don't get me wrong. The actual impact that cigarettes have on like a health, you think about all the doctors that you need to employ, all the nurses, all the stuff, it's counterproductive in many respects. So the government is definitely working like to try and wean off the cigarette smokers because long term it's detrimental.
Well,
I just want to say, firstly, the thing with cigarettes, the pictures, like, they don't actually intend them to do anything. If someone's addicted to smoking, they're addicted to smoking.
Yeah.
You know, they still pick up a cigarette. It's the same with gambling, you know, you get gambling out there, it's like at the end, it's like when the fun stops.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're addicted to gambling, you're not going to go, That's a good point. You know, I didn't try that before.
That's what I was adding to the point that prohibition doesn't cause you stop. It will make you like, doesn't matter. Like, that's why, you know, instead of adding that they could have done something, but it's not for their, like, it's not for money or, you know, for profit. So why would they do that?
Like you said, don't you guys think that the picture for the beginner, it actually prevents them from actually smoking?
Yeah. There we go. This is good.
I used to be a smoker.
Good question.
As a teenager.
Yeah.
Because I look after people that I've seen that have a lung cancer, that have history of smoking and all this stuff, I do not smoke. I don't actually like smoking.
Yeah.
Yeah? Don't you think for other young people, by them looking at that picture, it kind of turned them off? Because
good question. That's a good question.
Smoke.
Okay.
But the thing is, it's the environment. The parents were smoking, the parents were drinking, so that's all they know. Whereas my parents, no one in my family has ever touched a cigarette, so I wouldn't go ahead and touch a cigarette. Do you know what I mean?
But yeah,
and even
speak.
Okay, I am this person you're talking about. I smoked when I was 13, up and for like 13 or 15, but up until I was like 21. And no, those pictures didn't do anything for me. It was literally just a mind switch. It was like someone who I believed in or I guess liked at the time, just like they told me, nah, it's not for you. And at that moment, I just believed them. I just chose to believe them and I just stopped. And it wasn't like, yeah. Like we even
but
like.
Don't you guys think like smoking culture has reduced? I'm not sure in Darwin, but I know in Perth the smoking culture has reduced severely.
Smoking what?
It's
sorry?
Not
culture.
Culture. It's not actually. It's not because people don't see smoking as something nice. And I know in a lot of cities.
Yeah.
Young people are not actually enjoying smoke. I know they're going to other stuff, not smoking, but they don't actually fancy smoking much.
That's interesting. So what do you think would cause a huge shift? Surely pictures are not causing a huge shift, because if they're moving from smoking, then they're probably increasing in alcohol.
There is a lot of, I think based on that, there's a lot of promotions, media promotions regarding how bad smoking is. But because the smoking becomes norms, young people don't like something that is norm. They want something extreme. So then instead of going smoking, they go something a bit.
Extreme. Oh, that's a very good point. The norm is not enough. Extreme is where it's at now.
So anyway, remember that question you asked a bit ago about how we obtain power?
Yeah, we're supposed to be on this question, man.
So I would think that the first step to gaining power would be to have sort of power over yourself. And
yes.
You've mentioned before how you can't control the brain. No, the brain is... The brain is at the top of our body, but it's like the center point, you know.
Yeah.
If we die because our brain stops, you know, we get stabbed in the heart, like that doesn't kill us. The fact that there's no blood going around our body, our brain doesn't get... Is that true? I'm not a scientist.
No, the other way around.
Okay.
The other way around.
That's my previous statement. Anyway, no.
No, let him speak. Let the man express himself.
I'm done talking.
Just a point. A human can only pronounce dead when the heart stops, not when the brain is stopped.
Continue, ask yourself, yeah, say yourself.
You learn something new every day. I completely forgot what I was going to say now. No, it's not your fault. I forgot after I said... I forgot the second I said something idiotic. Power of yourself.
Yeah, having power of yourself is the beginning of all. The control center. Something.
Well, yeah. You know, we are our brain. So. But, I'm completely lost. I'm sorry.
Next.
My question.
Yeah.
I have a question for everyone.
Listen, everybody.
I have a question for everyone. Like, does anyone really believe that if government and scientists, if they work together, they can create a drug that can make people high and, you know, all these things without any side effect at all? Do you believe they can do that? Like, government and scientists, so you imagine waking up tomorrow morning, you know, smoking and no side effect.
If we look at it at the biggest picture, I think people,
We've got to close up. 5 minutes, we'll close up.
It's an escape. Smoking weed, drinking is an escape. That's what young people are like. I ask them, why do you smoke? Why do you smoke weed? Oh, because I escape. I feel like I'm on top of the world. They just want that high feeling. So what I've tried to do when I run programs is you have to make, for people to stop smoking, I can't make people stop smoking, but you have to make it personal with them. You have to give them help them develop a personal reason as to why. People could stop smoking for their mum, for their dad, etc., etc. So it's about making it personal with them. Yeah, a purpose. So when you go in, and it's about showing them that you don't need this drug to get high. I'm high all the time, but I don't smoke weed.
Me too.
Spiritually, I'm on another... what I see here outside is not where I am. I'm high all the time. And I learned
because
that...
Because what this drug does is just enhances your senses. Yeah. That's all it does.
But you can enhance your senses
naturally.
It puts
you in the present moment where you're disconnected or attached to any circumstance. That's
what
it does.
Our imagination is a very powerful sense that people haven't... You can be anywhere in the world you want to be right now. Yeah. And detach from this.
You can reach that same state from... People are using drugs and alcohol to reach that state. You can reach that state on your own. Your mind actually does that. The substance doesn't do it. It's your mind does it.
Yeah, this whole conversation about cigarettes started from lack.
Yes.
It started from lack. And the point is, we must grow. Like, even if you don't want to grow, you're lying to yourself. You know, your body grows without you. And, you know, the little that you have, you always want to make some sort of adjustment or make it better or nicer, or, you know, I might want to have two of those things. We're always constantly wanting to grow. And you all have that in you. Think of it as like a seed. We're all a seed, and we just need to be in the right environment to grow.
And that's what this environment is all about. It's about bringing us together so we can keep growing. And to end up with this topic of power, even though we're supposed to be on feeling, the stuff that I prepared we didn't touch on again. Don't worry, we got to go with the flow. But power was necessary today. And power begins with self. And the first level of power is of yourself. And it starts with learning how to communicate with your mind, learning how to manage your inner thoughts and manage your speech within yourself, your inner speech that you have within yourself. And you must know that if you cannot manage what is within you, you cannot manage anything outside of you. Stop trying to manage anything outside of you if you have yet got any sort of management from what's happening inside of you. That's it for today. Thank you.